I'm going to start with a love story. Any of you who have been to London and have used the Underground will have undoubtedly heard a safety message coming over on the tannoy telling you to mind the gap. Now, the voice that you probably heard belonged to a man called Oswald Lawrence. And whenever Mr. Lawrence died, his wife would go to Embankment Station, which was the last station that used the announcement with his voice every day just to hear his voice. Whenever that station eventually took away the announcement, Mrs. Lawrence wrote to the company and asked if she could have a recording of her husband's voice for posterity. So touched were Transport for London with her story that not only did they provide her with a recording, but they have agreed to restore that announcement with her husband's voice to Embankment Station. So in that case, a gap between the living and the dead was metaphorically bridged. A gap between a company and its customer was bridged. And a gap between modernization and the past was also bridged. My central theme today is gaps, and more importantly, how we can bridge them. Gaps are part and parcel of our political, our social, and our economic lexicon. Gender gaps, productivity gaps, the gap between rich and poor. I want to talk about a gap that poses a challenge to and a potential threat to governments the world over, including our own government here in Stormont. Let me begin by sharing a quote with you. Thomas Sowell is an eminent American economist from the Chicago School, and he once said that the first lesson of economics is scarcity. There is never enough of anything to satisfy all those who want it. The first lesson of politics is to disregard the first lesson of economics. Now, in reality, something that I will very quickly learn, all governments do have to deal with scarcity. And in reality, governments are severely limited by the resources that are at their disposal. No government can ever achieve everything that all of its citizens want or need, but that reality seems to escape the aspirations of many of the population. Oddly, during this downturn, what people expect of a government has actually increased. And I say oddly because people clearly understand that times are tough and that money is tight. People have had to undergo their own personal comprehensive spending reviews at home, and they've had to decide not to go on holiday, not to change their car, and in some more extreme cases, they've had to choose between heating and eating. Yet knowing that budgets in households and businesses are tight, some still think that the resources available to governments are endless. That then creates a gap. And it's a gap that I like to call, let me see if we can get up, the expectations gap. Now, what this is in essence, let me bring up a fairly crude graph to try to explain it here for you. Let me see if it'll come up. It's not, oh, here it is. Ignore the numbers, it's just there for the gap. So there's one line, and there's a second line. So what in essence happens is, at exactly the same time as what, let me see if the other one will come up here. There it is now. Exactly the same, we'll go back. Couldn't get it at all now. I'm getting jumping ahead. I'm probably hitting it too much here. Let me see if we can get it up. Here it comes. It's not worth waiting for this much, let me say. But really what in essence happens is that what public expectations of what government can deliver increases at exactly the same time as what it can actually deliver decreases. That then creates a gap, which if the other line was there, we could see it. And that gap then, so the gap is created. And that then, in turn, creates a problem. Now, this gap isn't limited to the current period, extended period of austerity either. Costs associated with issues like an aging population or chronic health conditions like obesity and diabetes have the potential in the longer term to make the current economic crisis look like a teddy bear's picnic in comparison. So this isn't some short-term aberration that will disappear after a few years of good economic growth. This gap will grow and grow and grow. And unless governing parties get to grips with it, well then people will start to go shopping for other parties, or they will opt out of politics altogether. How many times have we heard people say that they don't vote, that they're not interested in politics, that it doesn't matter to them who is in power? There are lots of reasons, but whenever governments fail to reach the very high heights that their electorate expect from them, then it's little wonder then that the sort of cynicism, pessimism, and skepticism that this cartoon encapsulates creep into the public consciousness. Now, the wording is very small, so let me read to it. This man is talking to the bureaucrat behind the desk, and she says to him, "I'm sorry, sir, this is the Department of Immediate Dissatisfaction. Your appointment is with the Bureau of Eternal Frustration." So I think a lot of us here have an understanding of how that feels. It's little wonder then that sort of frustration with government does creep into people's collective consciousness. Politicians themselves can, of course, increase the aspirations and expectations of the population. We will all remember, I'm sure, this poster when I bring it up onto the screen. Again, having some difficulty. There it is, back again. But I think, yes, you saw it there. There it is. Everybody remembers this poster, I'm sure. We were all sort of swept away a little bit by the Obama campaign in 2008, believing that he was the panacea, not just to America's ills, but to everybody's ills. But very quickly after election, and a campaign that was built around two words, hope and change. But whenever he got into the White House, he realized that lifting America out of recession, ending two wars, and closing Guantanamo Bay were a little bit more difficult in reality than he first thought. Now, there are probably lots of different ways in which we can close the expectations gap, but what I want to focus on centers around one word, and that's innovation. Now, people, particularly politicians, are always telling local companies that they need to become increasingly innovative, that the future of our economy in virtually every sector is recognized as being knowledge-based. Now, whenever some of us think of innovation, we can conjure up an image in our mind of somebody in a white coat in a laboratory, working with a test tube and a Bunsen burner. You don't tend to think of this place that's coming up now. Let me see. I promise it is coming. There it is. You don't tend to think of this place when you think of innovation. That sort of cynicism that I spoke about before will undoubtedly infect our belief in the ability of our government to innovate. But I believe that in Northern Ireland, we are perfectly placed to become the most innovative public sector in the whole world. I imagine a Northern Ireland that is a laboratory of new ideas. Ideas that first and foremost benefit the citizens of Northern Ireland, but ideas that are a shining example to the whole world. Whenever you look at countries that are held up by organizations like the OECD and the World Economic Forum as paragons of public sector innovation, states like Singapore and the Nordic countries, they all share similar characteristics with Northern Ireland. They have small populations, they have limited land masses, they don't have an abundance of natural resources, they are peripheral to large markets, and especially in the case of Scandinavia, they have huge public sectors. That big public sector, so often in Northern Ireland seen as a weakness, has the potential to become a real asset. Take, for instance, public procurement. In Northern Ireland each year, central and local government spends over £3 billion on goods, services, and capital projects. Procurement has the power to encourage those tendering to create innovative solutions to problems in Northern Ireland, which if they work here, can create export opportunities for local companies. It isn't as if innovation is something that is alien to us in Northern Ireland in either the private or the public sectors. The mosaics in the ceiling in the Senate chamber, which I have pictures of here, which are just down this corridor here, hark back to our shipbuilding and our linen and our farming. That's not the one, there they are there. So they hark back to our linen and our shipbuilding and our farming heritage and remind us of a time whenever Northern Ireland was building ships that sailed the world and planes that won a war. When this tiny little nation was a major player in the global market before that term was even invented. So the question is then, can we innovate? Go back to Barack Obama. Yes, we can. How do we know this? Because we've done it before. So why then, the question might be, aren't we applying that innovation that is deep inside our DNA to the public sector as well? Well, the truth is we are. Perhaps the best example that I can think of in Northern Ireland today is our use of connected health. Pressures on the health budget have created opportunities to invest in innovative measures like remote telemonitoring and a telepresence robot. I don't know if any of you have seen this thing on television. It's appeared a couple of times. Just in case you're not sure, that's the robot on the right-hand side. The we're not that sophisticated yet, but this robot patrols the corridors of Daisy Hill Hospital in Newry, like a Dalek, a pretty benign Dalek, and a doctor is able to diagnose patients in Daisy Hill and Newry, even though he is located 30 miles away in Craigavon. That's the only example of its kind in the United Kingdom. So realizing as well the commercial possibilities that there are from this sort of technology, a unique memorandum of understanding has been signed between our health department and the Department of Enterprise. And our work in this field has recently been showcased in Brussels as an exemplar in the whole of Europe. In the time that's left to me, I want to talk about one particular aspect of innovation. And that's an aspect, again, where we in Northern Ireland are blazing a trail. And that's embracing advances in IT. The Department of Finance and Personnel, that's my one contractually obligated reference to the department, but the Department of Finance and Personnel has developed a series of shared services on behalf of the whole of the civil service. So projects like IT Assist, HR Connect, and Account NI have increased effectiveness as well as realizing efficiencies. And alongside Canada, we have probably the best example of shared services in government in the world. But we can go further. Most of us today have in our pockets or in our hands right now devices which have the power to transform how we interact with government every bit as much as it has changed how we enjoy our entertainment, how we keep in touch with our friends, and how we get our news. Mobile technology and apps have the potential to revolutionize the interface between citizen and government. This sort of thing is already happening elsewhere. So take a look at these two examples. These two apps, developed by the City of Boston, have made it much easier for citizens in that city to engage with their government on the sort of pesky problems that annoy the life out of people, things like litter, graffiti, and potholes, and have those sort of problems that diminish people's quality of life. Let me take one of them. The one on the left is called Street Bump. The other one's called Citizens Connect. What citizens can do with Street Bump is that they can, if they see a pothole in their street, they can alert the city governments to its existence via an app that they can download for free from iTunes. What that does then is it gives the city government real-time information about potholes and problems that they have to sort today, but it also gives them vital information about planning long-term investment. And most importantly, it actually keeps the city government accountable to the citizen who first raised the problem in the first place. The mayor of Louisville in Kentucky recently had launched an initiative called the Hackathon, and he did it in conjunction with an organization called Code for America. And $10,000 worth of prizes were offered to people who could invent new apps that would improve the quality of lives for the city's citizens. The winner this year was an app that used the city's own crime data to rate and rank the safety of various areas within the city. So this sort of thing can be done, it is being done, and in fact, Belfast City Council have recently developed their own app similar to the Boston one. We in Northern Ireland can be the catalyst for this sort of innovation. We can either commission specific applications ourselves, or we can use the power of open data to encourage innovators out there in society to develop their own apps themselves. But either way, the way in which we pay for our services, the way in which we get basic information, the way in which we can report problems can be made simpler and more straightforward. Perhaps we in government can never entirely bridge the expectations gap. I think sometimes, a bit like my kids at Christmas and what they want from Santa, there will always be people out there who will expect their government to be able to do much more than it is actually able to do. But by making it even easier for citizens to engage with their government, by using platforms like apps that people are increasingly familiar with and fond of using, and by recognizing that just as information technology advances increases expectations, so too can its embracing by government bridge that gap. And maybe then we can start to break down some of the barriers, actual and perceived, that are out there that government is distant and remote and unresponsive. There are loads of other ways in which governments can innovate. We can use procurement to produce new ideas. We can focus much more on prevention. We can devise and develop different models of service delivery. We can work much more with the private and the third sectors. We can encourage collaboration right across government, and we can use technology to make engagement even easier. But if we aspire in Northern Ireland to become the most innovative public sector in the world, then we can imagine a future where instead of minding gaps, we're bridging them. Thank you.